You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go wild.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com. While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, Come and Take It patches, Sheepdog, Zombie Response Team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage. Hey, Preppers and Patriots. This is a re-air of my appearance on Survival Punk with James and Mike. Had a great time, and we talked about a lot of cool prepper stuff. So enjoy the show. As a quick caveat, I will tell you that the sound quality is a little rough on my end. It's because I was having some trouble with one of my cables and my somewhat new sound recording studio equipment. And I ended up having to call in on my telephone. So it's not the best quality. And it was due to my equipment and not theirs. But it's still a great show. So enjoy. It's time for a quick break and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out Silver.com today.
Recon.
Greg, yeah, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be on the Survival Pod Podcast.
Awesome. Great. So how's your day going?
Pushing 100 pretty much 9 months out of the year. We've got four seasons here. We've got almost summer, still summer, and tourist season. So it's hot, and I'm in Fort Lauderdale, which is pretty much like the zombie apocalypse almost down here. It's like living on the set of The Living Dead. It really is.
Oh boy.
So we're in the process of a slow bug out. So we're getting our house ready to sell, and I've got my house. It's kind of like a little prepper house. I've got the water cache barrels and solar panels, and I've got the raised bed gardens. But in the summer, nothing will really grow. So I had to go to Lowe's and get some of those, just like the garden the windowsill garden herbs. To put in that raised bed garden so it doesn't just look like a trash heap. That doesn't help your house value very much.
Oh, yeah.
So I was out there trying to water that just now and stepped on a rusty screw, which went through the bottom of my flip-flop and broke off of my foot. So I just got done digging that out. But fortunately, I'm caught up on my tetanus shots and all of that stuff. And, I always try to take care of my teeth and all that stuff because, when the apocalypse comes, you're not going to be able to do a lot of that stuff.
Right.
And I think a lot of people take that basic maintenance stuff for granted. And it's so much easier to just get out of the way now, stay up on your teeth. And, if you're not going every 6 months for a cleaning and get your cavities filled or whatever, try to do it at least once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Just to stay up on that basic maintenance stuff. And every 7 years, make sure you get your tetanus shots and things like that to ward off tetanus, because that's a bad thing to get in the apocalypse. And you're going to be, and when stuff breaks down, if it does and when it does, you're going to be doing a lot of stuff that you don't do on a regular basis. So you're going to be more at risk for more of those types of, little injuries. And sometimes it's the little foxes that kill.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one thing that I found that most people overlook when they're prepping. They will prep their bunkers. They'll prep their bug out bags. They'll prep their pantries and completely forget to prep their own bodies.
It is a problem, yeah. It's not quite 100 up here in Tennessee, but it's about 200% humidity. It's horrible right now.
Yeah, it's horrible, and it feels about 100 in our pod cave.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So,
okay, go ahead.
Okay.
You can take the first one.
All right. Well, I just wanted our listeners would be wondering, what exactly, how did you get into the whole prepper recon thing? How did that start?
Well, I guess the first time I really sort of started to snap out of my normalcy bias was probably right around when everybody else did, was 9/11, when I saw the towers come down and, you know, the nation's under attack, and, you know, we've never seen anything like that on American soil in my lifetime. So, you know, I started thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? I should get ready to defend myself. You know, I should probably put aside a little extra food. And I sort of started thinking along those lines at that point. But, you know, things sort of came back to normal. And I guess I sort of got lulled back to sleep by just the comforts of life and sort of forgot all about it there for a little while. And then the housing bubble of 2008, I think that scared me more than 9/11, because I didn't understand what was going on and what happened. And the more I started learning about that, and I started reading everything I could about economics, reading everything I could about the banking system, and trying to learn as much about our monetary system as possible after that, and I started realizing how close we came to an absolute total economic meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm looking, they're doing absolutely nothing to fix that. In fact, everything that we're doing, we're just exacerbating the problems.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, one of the big problems that we had in 2008 is the banks were too big to fail.
Yeah.
So what do? Well, we absorbed them into bigger banks. So now we have two bigger banks to fail. You know? And it's like, well, we didn't really fix that problem. And we had subprime debt. You know, that was one of the big problems. And of course, we're doing that all over again. You know, we still have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac writing loans to people that would never get them in the normal banking system because of their credit and because of their work history and how much money they have for a down payment for a home. So we still have the government being involved in the housing market and the subprime loan industry. So we're doing the same things that we did in 2008. The only difference is it's sort of like we've spent all of our bullets. We've kind of fired all the bullets out of the gun, so we don't really have any more defenses for the next round. And it's kind of like this big Jenga puzzle, you know. It was getting too big, and it was about to topple over, so they cut some rubber bands and some paper clips and some bubble gum, and they're trying to stick this whole thing back together. But in the meantime, they just keep piling more and more bricks up onto the top of the thing, and they're doing nothing to address the foundational structural problems. So I just think that it's all going to come crashing down, and it's going to be a mess when it does, and I think that we're going to have a very serious period of adjustment to have to go through, and I think that survival is going to favor the prepared. So that's when I really started getting serious about it after 2008, and I guess I started Prepper Recon about 3 years ago, and then I started the podcast about a year and a half ago.
Awesome.
And then I started writing fiction almost a year ago, about a year ago last June. So I put out my first fiction book, which was the Economic Collapse Chronicles. Book one was called American Exit Strategy. It was sort of a dystopian fiction that I used to look at the real life politics and financial problems that we're having in the country.
Awesome. I will have to pick that up. Kyle actually turned me on to you. I've read through most all of your new book, the Retreat Security. I'll have to pick up some of your older books and give them a read, because I'm such a junkie for dystopian future apocalyptic books that that was really one of the key things that got me into prepping, was just my love of that whole zombie fiction and this dystopian future movies and stuff. So definitely have to give that a read. So speaking,
and I'm originally from you guys' neck of the woods. I'm from Kentucky originally.
Ah. Oh wow!
In the book, you see this couple that lives in South Florida, sort of zombie apocalypse territory where I'm at right now, and they're preppers, and when the collapse comes, they sort of find out they're not really the level of preppers that they thought they were, and mm-hmm. the collapse sort of reveals how thin their preps actually are, and they have to basically sell the house, pack up a pickup truck full of their stuff, and bug out and move in with family up in the mountains of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And they sort of ride out the collapse in Kentucky, but you get a lot of perspective from, like, you know, news broadcasts, and you see what's going on with the politicians, and you see sort of the libertarian sort of Ron Paul movement folks that are fighting against the mainstream Republican and Democrat parties that are really using the collapse as a jumping off point to institute a totalitarian regime. So it basically eventually culminates in a civil war, and you just have to read the book to see who wins.
I gotta say, a totalitarian government scares me a lot more than a government that just disappears and says, we're out of money, we're gonna go away.
Now, what exactly does
I think I can do that, because that's pretty close to what our founders had in mind, you know, of just having just enough government to keep us from killing each other, ripping each other off, and defending the borders, which all of this government, you know, almost nearly half of your income goes to taxes now. If you figure your federal and your Social Security, and then the sales tax for your state, and then if you have a state, I don't think Tennessee doesn't have any state income tax,
no.
Which is great.
Like, yeah, thankfully.
But a lot of other states do, so they have state income tax, and then you have property tax, and then you've got sales tax when you spend your money, and you've got, you know, it's just tax after tax,
right,
after tax after tax. And they take all this money, and they're not doing any of the things they're supposed to be doing. They're not protecting us. They can't protect us. The police really, you know, they're not really in the position to protect us. What they're supposed to be doing really is guaranteeing our rights to be able to defend ourselves. And they're not really doing that. You can't take a gun in a stadium or a post office, or, you know, even if you're in the most conservative gun loving state in America, you know, there's this whole list of places where you're not allowed to go armed, and they're not defending our borders. You know, we've got military bases in over 130 different countries, and we've got people just walking across the border in Texas, you know, and it's a big crisis now because we've got our military doing everything except what they're supposed to be doing, which is defending our own borders. And they don't stop us from ripping each other off. You know, you look at Goldman Sachs, they had both sides of the deal in 2008 when the housing bubble popped. They were selling subprime CDOs rated as AAA debt. And then on the other side of it, they were shorting those same instruments that they were selling as AAA debt massively, and they just made tons of money on both ends of that deal. And nobody ever went to jail for that. So the government's doing absolutely none of the things that it's supposed to be doing, yet they're taxing us for almost half the money we make and doing all this stuff that they're not supposed to be involved in, like welfare. You know, that's supposed to be the job of the church and, you know, getting involved in foreign politics, you know, which, you know, that's, if 9/11 wasn't an inside job, if it really is what they said it was, then, you know, it's blowback from us sticking our nose where it doesn't belong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a like a rabbit hole that Mike would love to go down, but this would take the whole episode if we got onto 9/11.
Oh, absolutely. I I could talk you in the middle of next week on 9/11 and the government's basically orchestration of such. But right. This is about you tonight.
and it's about your new book, Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics. So tell us about that.
Yes. Well, I've had David Kobler. I met him actually in Lakeland, Florida. Life Changes Be Ready. They do a really, really good prepper expo every year in Florida. And they had David Kobler there as one of the speakers, and I was there promoting my Economic Collapse Chronicles series of books and podcasts and so on and so forth. And I met David, and subsequently he came on the show a couple of times, and one of the times I mentioned to him, you know, you've got all that great stuff about the Minutemen and security and things like that. I said, you need to put all that stuff in a book, because a lot of people watch that stuff, but then they don't take any notes on it. They don't really have it anywhere. And if they ever need it, there's a good chance that there's not going to be any YouTube for them to go back and reference. And it would be great for them to have that in a paper form, or at least on a PDF, so they can print it out from their computer or whatever. And he said, yeah, I would love to. He said, I'm just not a writer. I'm not familiar with the publishing process and Amazon and all the things that, you know, the whole learning curve that there is into writing a book and getting a book published and printed and everything. And I said, well, you know, why don't we do it together? We work on it together, because you've got all of the military experience. I never served in the military. I guess I sort of look at podcasting as sort of, you know, I'm fighting the information war sort of.
Right. Absolutely.
I guess I sort of look at that as being my service, but I didn't serve in the military, so he's the one that had all of that information and that knowledge, and I just tried to work with him and get it formatted and give people the basic things that they need to be sort of a jumping off point for them to start to think outside of the box and be able to, if you're in a neighborhood and you have a natural or a man-made disaster and you pick up the phone and 911's busy or off the hook or whatever, you'd be able to organize your neighbors or organize the people in your retreat, and it just makes some common sense moves to harden your home and make yourself a harder target. In James Wesley Ross' last book, one of the opening lines and one of the quotes in one of the first chapters says, if you don't want to get eaten, don't look like a Snickers bar. So it had a lot to do with, you know, just sort of hardening your home and looking a little bit more like some a formidable target, so that ne'er-do-wells will just sort of keep moving along and find somebody else to pick on.
Good. I really when I was for the your book to look at it, I really, the first thing I thought was this is something that just hasn't been explored. Like, I've not seen a book from the prepper aspect on, you know, retreat security or small unit tactics, which are two things that I've been interested in, and there's just not a lot of good resources out there. So
yeah, there's the military field manuals, which are really, really thick, and they get really, really in depth.
Right.
And it's pretty dry reading. And you know, for most of us, you know, especially if you're the product of a public school system like me, you know, you just don't have any kind of a attention for squat. You know, you can watch about a 15-minute video and you're on to the next thing. You can't stay focused that long to sit and read through that big two-page manual. So we tried to boil it down and just give you some real clear thoughts and some real clear action points, and, you know, give you a real short list of some gear that you can put together to help you be a better security member for your group or what have you, and just give you a fistful of tactics that you can sort of work with and give you some teach people the hand signals and the basic troop movements and the things that people get they learn when they're in the military, but if you're not in the military, you don't really have any way of knowing that stuff. And even for military guys that maybe have a security team, and rather than every time they get a new person to come into their group, rather than have to go over all of that stuff, you know, they could just hand them this book and say, here, read this, and, you know, it would sort of bring them up to speed so that, you know, the next time the group trains as a unit, they're going to be more familiar with the basics.
Excellent. One of the things I really liked about your book was I think it was like 100 pages on the PDF that I read. So not like a 5,000 page, you know, tome on a lot of the things that just weren't really applicable to defense. You know, some of the books may cover topics, you know, for larger military, you know, tactics, you know, invading countries and whatnot. But that's not really applicable to the prepper and, you know, a small retreat of, you know, 30 people, 100 people max.
Now, I mean, we're living in a country where pretty much everybody has ADD to some aspect. Nobody's attention span is going to be that long. So putting it in some compact, succinct form like that is really beneficial. And searching for the words here.
I don't know.
We just boiled it down to the sort of the meat and potatoes there.
Exactly.
We cut out all the fluff. And even if you've got the attention span, you know, you've got work and kids and keeping up the yard and keeping up the garden. And if you're a prepper, you know, you're thinking about your, you know, you gotta bag up the beans and the rice and, you know, and you're watching for sales and, you know, and you're keeping your solar panels going and keeping the garden box going and keeping the compost going. You got so many other things competing for your time that, you know, sometimes you just need to, you need to just get in there and get the bullet points and read it and know that you have that in case you ever need to go back to it. It's just sitting there on the shelf.
Awesome. So let's move along and boil some other things down. What are some of the easy things you can do to sort of harden your home and make yourself less a threat to possible bad people?
You know, about 30% of the break-ins in America are people walking in to unlock doors. It's just phenomenal the amount of people that don't just lock their door. Another easy thing that takes absolutely no time is turn on your porch light. Because if a bandit's got, if he's going to take between the house with the lights on and the house with the lights off, he's going to take the house with the lights off because his body profile isn't going to be profiled if a patrol car rides up the street. So just turn on a light. So, you know, if somebody's in your front yard doing no good, they're shown for doing that. And they're, you know, like a cockroach, they're going to run and try to operate somewhere in the dark. Another really easy thing is turn on your TV. It wastes a little bit of electricity, but it's a lot cheaper than having your house broken into. Another easy thing is getting a gun safe. You know, gun safe's just a great idea anyway. Most every prepper has firearms around of some sort or another, and to have a gun safe to keep those safe. You know, even if you don't have kids. Which, if you have kids, you have to think about trigger locks and gun safes and all that kind of thing, because there's so many horrible accidents from people being irresponsible and leaving their guns laying around where their kids can get to them, and the kids, you know, young children, and it just looks like a toy to them, and the next thing you know, one of them's dead. Right. But you know, a gun safe is a great thing to have anyway. But I always tell everybody it's a great idea to keep some cash outside of the bank, and I think that, you know, a gun safe is a great place to keep that, and I'm a big fan of gold and silver, and the gun safe is a great place for that, plus your guns and your ammo. So and then make sure that you've got that thing bolted to the floor, because somebody can roll in there with a dolly and haul it out and worry about getting it open after they get it back to their garage or their shop or wherever they're going to try to pop it open.
Oh, absolutely.
And then back to the television, you know, they've got those things that are called fake TVs. They just make the light of like there's a TV on inside. But having the real deal going, you've got the voices. You put it on a news channel, and there's always somebody on there running their mouth. That's basically all the mainstream news does. It's just, they're just government puppets putting out whatever they got thrown on their desk that day. So, it makes a great burglar deterrent, because somebody comes up to your door and puts their ear up against your door and they hear people talking. And so they naturally assume, because there's somebody talking, there's at least two people in that dwelling, because, you know, who's that person talking to? So there's lights on, there's movement, there's voices talking, and they'll just move on to the next place rather than get involved with that.
Yeah, they do like the low-hanging fruit there. And speaking of fruit, one of the things I read in your book was to surround your retreat with blueberry bushes, because they're thorny. And
raspberry bushes, blackberry bushes, yeah. all have thorns. If you're in South Florida where I'm at, bougainvilleas are a horrible thing to get tangled up in. Mm-hmm. And on my fence, on the perimeter of my fence on the inside, I have pineapple plants, that's another dual-purpose thing, because, you know, you got the raspberry, blackberry bushes, you can eat the fruit from it, and it's a form of defense. And so the pineapples, you know, we get, each plant makes one pineapple every year, and they're real spiky, and they've got, like, the branches or the leaves or whatever you want to call it that come out from it, they've got little spikes on it, and mm-hmm. there's teeny little amounts of toxin in there where if you mm-hmm. scratch your skin with it, it'll really irritate your skin for a couple of days.
Yeah, there's nothing like a plant that can stab somebody.
No. Speaking of that, I actually want to see if because I'm kind of doing a not-so-slow bug out here in the next, like, 2 months. About surrounding my retreat with acacia bushes, which just look they look horrible to get stuck in. I mean, I know they grow. What's that?
That's awesome, and they grow good in Tennessee.
That's what I gotta look into. I know they grow well in Africa, and I was like, maybe they'll grow during the summertime because we have a lot of heat and. Because if they are, I mean, the natives in Africa use it to fend off tigers and lions, so...
Now, barring acacia, I can actually vouch for the effectiveness of blackberry bushes. Yeah. A few years ago, I got stuck in a few.
Oh, no.
Yeah, on a three-wheeler, I might... that was not a fun day out.
Oh, wow. All right, so next up, I just want to dig into... And I know... I want to dig into some gear and some weapons for security and stuff. And I know that everyone has their personal favorites and whatnot, but what do you suggest here?
What's your recommendation?
Well, I think if you're only going to buy one gun, I think the Glock is – that's what you want to get. If you got a budget and you can buy one gun and that's all you can get, I think the Glock's what you want to get, because it's universal. They don't jam. They go on forever. It's almost like an AK-47 in the form of a handgun. You know, they're just very resilient weapons, and you get a lot of magazine capacity with them. The magazines are interchangeable. If you've got the smaller model Glock, you can put a larger model magazine of the same caliber in it. Parts are easy to get. They're easy to take apart, easy to clean, and I think that it's important to have a handgun for your first weapon, because if you ever have to bug out, and you might have to travel through some areas where you're not going to be able to carry your shotgun or your 10/22 or your AR-15 or AK. And I think if you're only going to have one thing, I think that's what you want to have, and it's concealable and it's easy to keep around you in tough times. If you're out in the field or doing whatever, you know, it's going to be a lot less weight to have that carrying around with you while you're clearing trees or doing whatever you're having to do.
Good. I was actually going to ask if you were a Glock man or a 1911 man. So
yeah, I think you already covered that one.
Yeah.
Covered it. Yep. Now, if you had a second gun, then I think that the second gun should be Mossberg 500 or Remington 870, something where you have that versatility to have the short barrel and a certain load for home defense, and then if you want to get out and hunt something, you put the long barrel on it and you have the versatility of putting different loads in there to meet different needs.
All right.
Gun number three should be a battle rifle, because I think that's what the Second Amendment's really all about.
Yeah.
It's not about hunting, and it's not about personal security. It's about your responsibility to defend the Constitution and your responsibility for maintaining the freedom that our forefathers handed to us, which there's very, very little of that left. I mean, if you go through the list of the Bill of Rights, they've pretty much all been violated. The First Amendment, freedom of the press, you know, we're seeing that right now in Ferguson, Missouri, regardless of what side of that you fall on, whether you think the kid had his hands up or whether you think he was attacking the cop, you know, because there's conflicting stories on that. Regardless of what side of that fence you come down on, the press is being assaulted. The press is having they're having tear gas fired at them. They're having a rubber bullet shot at them. They're being intimidated. They're being arrested, detained, you know. That's not a free press. That's the First Amendment. So that's gone. Second Amendment's gone. You know, we went through a list of places that you can't take a firearm anymore. If you live in New York, they effectively basically banned anything with high capacity magazines, anything like a 1911 or a Glock. You can't buy a 7-round magazine for it, and that's the limitation in New York for magazine capacity. So anything that doesn't make a magazine small enough to conform to their laws, they've basically banned it. So Second Amendment's gone. Fourth Amendment, we don't have any right to security anymore. We saw that after the Boston bombing, when the police went house to house, kicking in doors and pulling people out, that obviously were not this 19-year-old Zanaroff kid, you know. And after they found him, you know, they're all on the street cheering that their Fourth Amendment rights were completely violated. And we can go all down the list, you know, right to a speedy trial, you know, that's gone because we've got the National Defense Authorization Act. So there's very, very little left. And, you know, and I think that that's something that you should exercise that right to the best of your ability.
Awesome. Do you have any accessories you like to put on the weapons? I know you had some chapters on night vision gear and whatnot in the book. I don't really know how that seems like one of the higher end things. Like you know, after you get your bases covered, maybe you want to look at some night vision. But that's me.
Yeah. It's something worth saving up for and getting the good stuff. You're probably looking at a couple $1,000 to get a good night vision. If you're going to get a helmet and a mount system and everything, you could be getting close to $3,000.
Now, somebody for somebody looking to get into this lifestyle, into whole prepping, recon, all that stuff, is there any specific training that you would recommend that they undertake?
Well, just when you get stuff, you know, try it out. You know, don't buy stuff and then just stick it in the box and wait for doomsday. You know, you see these survival seed vaults. I feel sorry for the guy that thinks that on the day after doomsday he's going to pull out his survival seed vault and go plant a garden, because I'll tell you, there's a huge learning curve with that. You know, if you live in an apartment, try to grow a basil plant. You know, just try to anything, you know, one tomato plant, try to put it out there on your balcony. Try to do something just to teach yourself that skill of gardening. And I think gardening is a great place to start. And, you know, if you don't know how to cook, you definitely need to learn how to cook, because between here and the if we're going to have the economics breakout, you know, we're going to see this continued downward spiral for several more years where it's just tougher and tougher to get a job. And learning how to, like, prepare your own food and make a good meal, you know, we were talking about personal preparedness earlier. I know you guys did a great show with Glenn Tate not too long ago about being in shape and personal preparedness. And, you know, and learning how to cook good food is, you know, you're going to get away from as much processed stuff. And, you know, even if you're not on a paleo diet or whatever, you can learn to cook more nutritious food, and you'll save money as opposed to eating out all the time or eating garbage, and that's a great skill. Cooking, gardening, you know, if you buy a gun, take it to the range. Most of the guys at the range are, you know, they work there because they love guns, so they're anxious to give you pointers and show you how to hold it and show you how to load it and all of that stuff. So get out there and use your preps. And if you're getting a water filter, you know, go camping with it. Take it out and camp with it. And if you got a fire starter, take that camping with you. You know, if you're trying to learn how to tune in on the shortwave radios and you know, get your gear out and use it.
Excellent. I highly agree. Like, I've seen so many people like post bug out bag pictures on the internet, and everything in their bug out bag is still sealed in the original plastic. And they've never tried any of this stuff. Whereas like, as soon as I get a new toy, I want to go out and play with it. I want to see if I can start a fire with it or chop down a tree. Like, I just don't understand that, you know, set it aside. And if I need it, you know, in case of emergency, break glass and open it then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm even, see, on the show, I'm known as the couch potato survivalist. He's the one with all the knowledge, and I'm the one with all the questions. But even I've got a bug out bag, and I've tried everything in it at least once. And like he said, I've seen people, I mean, you expect to still see the receipt in there, the tags on everything. Yeah. But they're so proud of it, they couldn't do a thing with it if you put a gun to their head.
Free readout, but they do a great show every Sunday night, and they're in the inland Pacific Northwest, and you know, it was sort of started up as to be the voice of the American readout, which was James Wesley Rawls' idea of conservative folks moving to the inland Pacific Northwest states, primarily like the Idaho Panhandle. And every year, which is coming up this weekend, that they're doing their annual T-Rex, and it's called it's a Teotihuacan readiness exercise, so they call it T-Rex.
Nice.
And they'll have a scenario, and everybody will, they'll cut the power off, or they'll bug out, or you know, and they'll try out all their communications and their backup power stuff and all of that, and they'll just sit aside an entire weekend for everybody to check out their comms and check out their gear. It's basically like you know, a drill. And you know, even if you don't live in an area like that, you can organize something like that just for your family or your mutual assistance group or whatever.
I definitely like that. Like, random, you know, just turning off the power and trying to live with your preps. I may try to organize something here. That would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. You're about to start homesteading yourself.
Yeah.
So that would be an awesome thing for our listeners. If they wanted to participate in that, many members of the Survival Punk Army wanted to come out and be a part of that. Go for it.
I got the next question I got is on tactics themselves. If you want to go over a couple of the tactics that maybe you talk about in the book, and then that was applicable to a small retreat.
Yeah, just gearing up for a patrol. I think that's important. You know, making sure whatever your mission is. We talk about the assault bag, which is, that's a completely different piece of equipment from your bug out bag. Your bug out bag is something meant to keep you alive for 72 hours. Yep. Your assault bag is a much smaller bag. We definitely recommend having a compression bag, and that's your mission specific bag. So if you're doing a 4-hour patrol, you know, what do you need to get by for 4 hours? Well, if it's going to be at night, you might need a flashlight. You might need an extra couple of clips. You might need a walkie-talkie, and you want to check all that gear out before you go on your control, your patrol. That's called the pre-combat inspection, and that's just going through and make sure you got your batteries in, you make sure your walkie-talkies are all set on the same channel, and all your gear works. If you're taking night vision, you're making sure that you've got all of your attachment equipment for that, whether it's a weapons mounted system or a helmets mounted system. You've got all that, you've got the batteries for that, it's functioning. And, you know, and whatever your mission is, you might want to have some water. Dehydration's a big thing, especially this time of the year. I know you guys said you're pushing 100. We're certainly pushing 100 down here, a good 6 months out of the year. So, you know, you got to stay hydrated. You got to have some water. I recommend having, you know, on any kind of a patrol, always having, like, at least some water purification tabs, if not a good filter with you, because you never know when your patrol mission is going to turn into an escape and evasion mission, and you're going to have to, you know, just bug out the woods or whatever for a few days and lay low if you get overran. So if you're on a little bit longer patrol, you might have to have your MREs with you or binoculars, whatever you need, if you need to put eyes on the enemy and observe the enemy. And you know, that's an important thing to think about. Mission-specific loadouts.
I hadn't even thought about doing, like, you know, test emissions like that. Well, obviously, if I did that at my apartment complex, I may get the cops pulled on me.
Weird thing is, almost everything he mentioned that should be in one of those mission bags, I've actually got in my bug out bag.
Yeah.
I'm prepared for all sorts of scenarios except, you know, being physically able to run.
Yeah.
That's when you specify your gear for the gray man approach. Yes. You know, you don't have the camo booty hat. Instead, you got the ball cap with the big Tennessee Volunteers ball cap or whatever, and you just kind of blend in with everybody. Just some good quality hiking shoes, not necessarily jump boots, and some jeans, not necessarily your tactical camo cargo pants, and you've got everything in like a khaki or a gray backpack rather than a military camo style backpack, and you're just trying to blend in, but you've still got all the equipment, the things that you need for your mission in that backpack.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one thing I've found now. Most people forget the true definition of camouflage. They think, oh, it looks like leaves or it looks like the desert or whatever. No, camouflage is basically anything you wear to blend in to the point where people staring straight at you have no idea what they're looking at.
Right. That's definitely the gray man concept of just trying to be the guy out there that just your eyes pass over and you don't notice at all.
Exactly.
Okay. So next up, do you have any resources besides, obviously I suggest people pick up your book. It's a great little read. Do you have any resources besides that that people could sort of dig in further on some of these topics if they're interested?
I'll tell you what, my first series, The Economic Collapse Chronicles, it's a fiction series and it's a three-part series. And I'll give you a little snippet of what it was before. But, you know, I put a lot of good prepper information in those books. So as you're reading it and just sort of enjoying the fiction, you get a lot of good quick tips in there as well. And the other thing about prepper fiction, what it does is it forces your mind to say, well, what would happen to me if I was in the situation that this character's in? Am I prepared for that? Am I physically prepared for that? Do I have the equipment for that? Do I have the skill set to get through that scenario? And how would I deal with it? It's a little bit like you're playing the conflicted card game with yourself as you're reading through the fiction, because you're having to think about how you would make it in the scenario that the character's in that particular section of the book. And so Economic Collapse Chronicles is a great resource.
Excellent. I personally love prepper fiction and whatnot, and I love to give it to people like Mike here because it it's better than saying, you fool, the government's going to collapse, you need to prep now. Getting them thinking on their own without you beating them over the head with it generally tends to bring them to our side quicker.
Absolutely.
That's right. And for people that are really ingrained in the normalcy bias and they haven't really snapped out of that yet, to read fiction doesn't challenge their belief system. So they can read it, and if they want to accept it and think, I wonder if that could ever actually really happen, then they're free to do that. But if they want to hang on to that belief system that everything's fine and the government knows what they're doing and they're going to take care of me and I don't have to worry about all this stuff, then they're free to just enjoy this fiction and keep moving on with their life.
Yeah, I found that once you get them thinking, though, you've already won the battle. Because people just, they normalcy bias. They're afraid to even think about some of these topics. So if you can sort of lowball it in there, it helps out a lot.
Yeah, most people are under the influence. Well, this will never happen to me.
This will never happen.
They're under that illusion. This is never going to happen to me. Well, that's like everybody thought 9/11 would never happen to us. Well, guess what? It did.
Yeah.
And nobody was prepared for it. Except the government that made it happen. All right. Let's see.
We're actually down to the last question I've wrote for you, and this one could be a doozy. When doing a little bit of research on you, I found out that you were so interested in the economy and world events. So is there anything going on right now that sort of has your hair standing on end that you're keeping an eye on?
Tons,
yes.
Probably one of the biggest things that I write about, and this was actually something that's in the Economic Collapse Chronicles, is the BRICS banks, which they just announced is going to be established in Shanghai, and that is an international trade settlement bank for Brazil, India, Russia, China, and South Africa, which is about a third of the global economy. And all these guys, when they trade in between each other up till now, have been using dollars. So let's say the Chinese are selling some computers to Russia, and Russia's selling some vodka to the Chinese. Well, they would take the rubles and the yuan, and they would exchange those for dollars to do that transaction. But once this international trade settlement bank is established, they won't use dollars anymore. That's going to decrease the demand for the dollar, and a lot of the printing that the Fed's been doing for the past few years to try to dig us out of this hole, which we're still in, despite almost doubling our money supply, all those chickens are going to come home to roost, and I think that we're really, really going to start to see some really serious inflation. So that's a definite big thing. I think it's a great time to be, for me, I don't give out the investment advice, but for me personally, I really like to try to keep 10% of my liquid assets in gold and silver, 5 and 5. And it just split that right down the middle. I like gold because it's stable and it's always been money. And I like silver because it's divisible and it's a small unit for barter situations. So I think that we can really, really be in for it. And then also, for anybody that's a Survival Punk listener, if they buy anything from the Prepper Recon store, they buy the individual first aid kits. We've got some really good IFACs on there, some really good assault packs, and some really good tactical concealed carry slings. When they're in their checkout, if they'll click the note to seller and they'll put Survival Punk in there, I'll include a free copy of Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics with their order.
Awesome. I'm glad you brought up the BRICS Alliance, because it's weird how I started listening to this podcast on history, which is, it seems kind of weird, but you learn from the history, and it's a lot based on like military tactics of the past. So I was listening to it, and they were some of the things they were talking about made me think about the BRICS Alliance and how they're, if we went into a third world war, this is down tinfoil hattery here. I'm just playing around here. If we went into a third world war, if they became against us, they're set up really well position-wise to do some damage with Brazil being here and, you know, South America close to us. And then, you know, everyone else could just devastate Europe from where they're at. So it was just sort of a scary little daydream I had.
Oh, yeah. And you figure, you know, India is the new service economy. That's where all of our customer services outsourced to India. China's the manufacturing base. You know, Russia's a very strong military base, you know, and of course, vodka, you know, yeah. And natural resources, oil and gas. And Brazil, that's a big energy base. They've got a lot of oil and natural resources there as well. So, you know, America, we don't really have anything. The only thing we've really got is dollars. And when that's gone, you know, this country's going to look very different. And it's going to be a tectonic shift for the entire world, I think.
Yeah. I mean, even if they decided to just that group alone, if they decided to just not have anything to do with America, that would cripple us by yourself. Because like what you just said, you know, we depend on them now because of globalization. So, yeah, don't even need bullets. Just need to stop giving us stuff.
Yeah. Now, don't call me a non-patriot.
Obama's effectively reignited the Cold War with Russia, you know, instituting sanctions and threatening to cut them out of the SWIFT system. And, you know, that's one of the things that this new BRICS bank's going to do. They're not going to need the SWIFT system because they'll do all their settlement with anybody they need to do it with through that system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we could see the BRICS nations come together and form a global currency out of that as well. That would be a, sort of a basket of currencies between them, sort of similar to what the IMF has. They have, you know, the IMF has right now, it's sort of a basket currency called special drawing rights, which are, you know, it's just a currency that anytime they make loans to member nations, they use they'll use SDRs, which are, you know, it's just made up of a basket of the member nations' currency. So depending on the size of the member nations' economy, that's how much of a percentage of the SDR that it's valued at. And so the BRICS could certainly do that. And the thing about the BRICS is that you know, they're stockpiling gold, especially Russia and China. So and the Indians, the Indian people are big gold buyers. So they could make a gold-backed currency, or they can make a fractionally gold-backed currency, and it would be a very tough thing on the dollar to absorb.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, that's all we got. This is a really good interview. Thanks for coming on, Mark.
Oh man, it was such a pleasure to be on the Survival Pod podcast. It was just it's a real honor.
Now, where can our listeners find you on the web?
At PrepperRecon.com, and I put out a new podcast every Monday and every Wednesday, and we get a lot of great guests on there. I know that you guys are Glenn Tate fans. Glenn Tate's been on the show a couple of times.
Nice.
We get a lot of economics people on there as well. We've had John Rubino on there. We've had Fabian Calvo. He's been on a couple of times. Doug Casey's been on. I guess every prepper in the world pretty much knows who James Wesley Rawls is. He's been on before, and he's going to actually be on next week. And then we're having him back on also in October to announce his new book. So and of course Southern Prepper One, who I co-wrote the retreat security and small unit tactics with. He's a regular guest on the show, and nice. That's every Monday and Wednesday. And that's PrepperRecon.com, and of course it's also all of our podcasts are replicated to our YouTube channel, which is just Prepper Recon.
Nice. This sounds like you got a great list of guests there. I don't think James Wesley Rawls will ever come on this podcast because I've done some not so great book reviews on his second book.
Oh, your mouth's coming back to bite your own.
Well, I admit I have a copy of Patriots, and I've read it several times, and I actually like that book. The second one, we won't talk about.
You know what? I would love for him to come on the show just to, you know, I want him to defend his books against you. Put you in your place. Absolutely. Well, Mark, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on here. And I just want to invite all of our listeners to visit his website, buy his books, listen to his podcast, and hopefully send in enough emails to get him back on the show sometime soon.
Awesome. And then hopefully,
yeah. Be checking out the podcast because we'll have the Survival Pond guys on there real soon, next month in September, and we'll be talking about September 11th and all of that on my show. All that.
Oh, yeah, I'll fill up a couple hours for you on that.
Detroit high priority 911 calls average 58 minutes for a response. How much longer will it be until budget cuts, natural disaster, or a total collapse make you responsible for your own security? The new book, Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics by David Kobler and Mark Goodwin, will teach you how to organize your team or neighborhood into a force to be reckoned with. You'll get tips to harden your home and protect your family, life, and property, both now and after the stuff hits the fan. Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics is available in paperback, Kindle, and audio editions. Buy it from Amazon.com before it's too late.